We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We have another Michigan captain stopping by the podcast today, but we're also going to raise the bar just a little bit because it is the only Butkus Award winner at the University of Michigan with so many great linebackers. We are joined today by Eric Anderson here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
It was euphoric because we'd finally gotten over that hump in a big game against a team that we had not had success against, which was unusual for us at that time. And to get that win, I think it really set us up for the rest of that season, which really was a very good season as well.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
There is so much going on in the world of college football. We've got two conferences, that one of them that we are a member of, not playing football. The other Power Five conferences will be firing things up this weekend. But before we get there, I want to bring in my partner on the podcast and shine a little bit of a spotlight on him, because this is coming out today on Friday, September 11. We all know what today is, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But tomorrow will be the debut of the Michigan Football Classics. They will kick off the pregame show at 11:30 on Saturday morning, going all the way through the end of November. Our first game is the Michigan-Notre Dame matchup, 1991, and we will take you back in the Wayback Capsule to an epic moment in Michigan Stadium, in Michigan football history, and that is the catch that happened and set Desmond Howard on a course for his Heisman Trophy. But it all started on the second game of the season against Notre Dame. 24-14 win. You can listen to it live on 97.1 The Ticket in the Detroit area, mgoblue.com. Tune in and other select stations along the Michigan Sports Network. And Brian Bush did so much work to prepare for this. So I want to make sure that everybody understands this would not have happened without Brian Bush. We may have tried to find somebody else to fill his shoes, but those shoes are too big. And Mr. Bush, I say thank you.
Well, I appreciate that, John. Very kind. It's a really fun project to dig into. You know, we'll talk about it a little bit on Saturday on the show. It's not the type of show we wanted to do. We wanted to be with Doug Karsh and Jim Brandstatter and Dan Dierdorf and Tony Butler at the Big House this weekend and for all these Saturdays this fall. But I will say, it's not because of me that this happened. It's because of Desmond Howard and Eric Anderson and Elvis Gerbach. Those guys are the ones, and it's really a fun project to dig into, and I'm really excited about some of the games we have. We're going to hear some Bob Eufer later on in this Michigan Football Classic series. We've got some good games coming up, and 91 Michigan Notre Dame. Hard to believe that game turns 29 years old early next week. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It does, and if anybody is unable to listen tomorrow, you can tune in to the podcast here on In the Trenches on Monday. We'll have a version, not the full broadcast version, but we will have a version like we do during the regular season of most regular seasons, a recap of what happened on Saturday. And this Saturday will be the 1991 matchup between Michigan and Notre Dame, a 24-14 win for the Wolverines. Epic performances by Elvis Gerbach and obviously Desmond Howard, but on the defensive side as well. And today's guest that we'll get to in just a little bit, one of the major components of that defense, Eric Anderson. I can't wait for you to listen to the conversation that I had with him. But Brian, today is 9/11. I've shared with our listeners and those in the Detroit area over the week and over the years my experience in D.C., and the days following it, because I was with the Washington Redskins. The NFL had put games on hold that weekend. We had gone down to the Pentagon to, you know, distribute water and help in any way that we could to, you know, just not ease the pain, but try and make it easier for those that were digging through the rubble, and to, you know, just talk and have conversations. And the one thing, and I said this earlier this week on 97.1, that the one thing I remember about the Pentagon after the plane had hit, and this was a couple of days after, I've never been in a war situation, and so I can't say it was, you know, it was as close to war as I can imagine, but it's because I have nothing to compare it to. But it was noisy because there were people moving around everywhere. There were conversations being had. There was heavy machinery working, but it was eerily silent all at the same time. And it's hard for me to describe that because it doesn't make any sense, as that day didn't make any sense. And to this day, it still doesn't make any sense. But where were you on 9/11?
So I was at the time in seventh grade, and my dad was a passenger on a plane that day. Now, obviously it was not one of the four planes that went down. And at the time, at that age, I didn't totally grasp what was happening, but I will never forget. I got a phone call at the school, which, you know, this is 2001. I don't have a cell phone at this point. My mom called the school and said, I need to talk to Brian. And she just said, Dad's okay. He landed. He's in Baltimore, but he's going to be there for a few days. And in that moment, I didn't even know what had happened. This was 11 a.m., I think, when I got this phone call. And then you see the news and you find out what happens. And, you know, so I was one of the fortunate ones in that, you know, my dad was not on one of those four fateful planes. But every year as time passes, and my dad has since passed away, but, you know, every year you think about that and just realize that, you know, for those four planes and everybody on it and everyone connected to someone who was on it, and all the places they affected, I mean, it's unfathomable. And the fact that, you know, I love hearing from you about this day. And I as long as we do this podcast, I'm going to ask you about this because of your unique experience. I had a very minor touch point, but for you to be embedded in a community that was so significantly affected by something that just, I mean, let's face it, that the way that, you know, what we're going through right now with the pandemic, it has been kind of all encompassing, right? And 9/11 and the ramifications of that were, I think that was the last time that our country was truly in something that really felt all encompassing.
It was. And, you know, I want to make sure that we recognize and remember the lives that were lost that day, the lives that have been lost since that day. A lot of the first responders, those that ran to the wreckage and the destruction, have lost their lives due to complications of that day. And we recognize them and thank them for their work and their efforts and their sacrifice. Just like we thank the first responders and those that are on the front lines of COVID. I want to make sure that we say thank you to them for the sacrifice of time, of taking the risk that they're taking, but to help out, you know, at this time, our country, but also the world as we continue to battle this pandemic. So there's so many people to thank, and we want to make sure that we recognize those people and all of those that have made the ultimate sacrifice, whether it was back on 9/11 or if it's now during this coronavirus pandemic. So we take just a moment to thank them. And Brian, there's really no easy transition going from talking about 9/11, and we kind of had to make that transition back then as well. Yeah. Of no NFL football games were played that following weekend. They were all postponed. We picked those up at the end of the NFL calendar. But the following week, we played for the Washington football team. We played in Green Bay on Monday night. And it was an unbelievable return to football, and an opportunity to, again, recognize those that had lost their lives. And, you know, as we try and get back to some semblance of normalcy during these times, one of the things that we do on a normal basis is a 7 from 77. So as we try and work our way through this podcast, through the pandemic, let's get into 7 from 77.
Yeah, let's do it, John. Number one, instead of Michigan versus Purdue, which was what the new Big Ten schedule had originally had for September 5th, the Big House played host to a protest regarding the postponement of football in the Big Ten and of fall sports in the Big Ten. We heard from Jim Harbaugh, Carlo Kemp, Aiden Hutchinson, and others who were covering that event. Your biggest takeaways from that organized effort to protest the decision that was made?
Well, one of the takeaways that I have is what Coach Harbaugh continues to talk about, and that is the sacrifice that these young men, these student athletes, are continuing to go through on a daily basis to make sure that they test negative. And when you think about the amount of tests in the month of August, those at the beginning of September here, you've got nearly 1,000 tests. And of those in the football program, zero positives. They have done an unbelievable job of handling a tough situation. And on top of that, they have done a wonderful job. And I am so proud of this football program in regards to how they have handled themselves in the media, the things that they say. We all know there are things that they want to say that they are holding back on,
sure,
that they would like to say, but they are continuing to move forward with the class that you would expect a Michigan student athlete to have. Carlo Kemp, Aiden Hutchinson, all of these guys, they want to play football, and we want to see them play football. I want them to play football, and we hear that from them. And I don't think there's anything wrong with them saying that. I'm proud of them stating and continuing to find their voice in this year of 2020. But I continue to go back to, there needs to be better communication. There needs to be the Big Ten has always been a conference of strength and of unity. Up until the beginning of August, even through this pandemic, it had been a pillar of strength and unity. Now, some of that has been chipped away because we just haven't had the information that we want or that we're seeking in regards to why the season was postponed when it was postponed. We understand that we're in the middle of a pandemic, and to have a college football season, to put it mildly, would be a challenge. But what went into the decision to make that happen? Why did it have to happen so soon? I think those are the questions that these student athletes are left pondering.
Number two on today's 7 from 77, you alluded to some of the other nuggets that have come out over the last week or so. the 10 legislators from around the Big Ten footprint sending a letter to Kevin Warren urging him to reverse the postponement of college football. Teddy Greenstein of the Chicago Tribune, who's been really he's been one of the most vocal and had the most frequent reporting about this whole situation. He came out with a tweet on Thursday saying that the Big Ten Return to Competition Task Force will be putting plans together that the league's chancellors will vote on by early next week. Kind of vague, but at this point, we're kind of sitting here waiting. We're seeing what those next steps are going to be. What has stood out to you about whether it's the letter, whether it's that report, whether it's what else you've seen from other leagues over the last week beyond that protest at the Big House?
Well, it's the passion that the Big Ten, you know, that it drives, that it has, that it's the alumni of the Big Ten. It doesn't matter the school. It's the current student athletes. It's their families. It's the coaches. It's the administrators that they have for the Big Ten. And it's, I don't want people to misconstrue what is being said. It is not to tear down the Big Ten.
Sure.
It is to try and find the strength of the Big Ten yet again, because it is still a strong conference and it needs to be a leader in this area. And some of it just comes down to being able to communicate and having a unified voice so that we don't hear one thing from administration, that we don't hear one thing from a commissioner or from presidents and chancellors or from coaches, that there is a unified message, and that's what we're seeking.
Number three on today's 7 from 77, let's go down a level on the football side. The state of Michigan reversing course on high school football. It's to return next week. Are you surprised, and what do you expect about what will obviously be a very unique year at that prep level?
Honestly, there's not much that surprises me in the year of 2020 anymore. And I'm not surprised because so much information changes. The world seems to change on a daily basis. And if you're on social media, it changes by the minute. And so... there's new information. There's just more data to be able to return safely for these high school athletes. And I think it's very commendable for those that are on the forefront of, you know, accepting the ability to make that change and to shift course. And, you know, yeah, it was upsetting when the high school football season was put on hold. But we know more now. We think we can do it safely. So let's go ahead and continue to move forward. And I really hope the Big Ten looks at that. And it's not a retraction of what happened in early August, but it is the fact that we do have more to go on now. And we have more to look at. We have more resources. And it is where we are today, and we can make a different decision that we could have made or that we did make back in early August. And there's going to be decisions that are made on a daily basis moving forward that are going to be based on different information than we have yet today.
Number four on today's 7 from 77, week 2 of whatever you call this college football season upon us. Coming up Saturday, 6 ranked teams in action. Just quick hitters on each of these 6 games, starting with number 1 Clemson at Wake Forest.
I think one of the trends we're going to see is that those teams that are in the hunt for the college football playoffs are going to come out with a fury. One, they understand the privilege that they have of playing college football, but also the fact that they don't know if a game is going to be canceled, if they're going to play their, you know, schedule in their entirety, and they are putting on their resume every single time what they are as a football team. And Clemson against Wake Forest, I'm excited to see Trevor Lawrence in year 3, see how he's grown, see how he's developed. He's a special athlete, and if you're a football fan, that is a game that you don't want to miss.
Number 5, Oklahoma at home against Missouri State.
Spencer Rattler, the quarterback, has been named by Lincoln Riley, and this is, in my estimation, a justification for us to continue to call Lincoln Riley a quarterback guru, a quarterback whisperer. You know, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, all those guys were great quarterbacks, and they learned a lot and performed well under Lincoln Riley. This is the first one that Lincoln Riley has handpicked and said, I think he has the tools to operate my offense at it, at the way it's supposed to be run. I'm excited to see this Oklahoma team, and I'm excited to see a handpicked quarterback by Lincoln Riley.
Number 10, Notre Dame, an ACC game at home against Duke.
I know. Doesn't it seem weird?
So bizarre.
To say that, that Notre Dame's in the ACC. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting football season because Notre Dame is a member of a conference right now. They're a full member of the ACC in every other sport. They regularly play six games in football in the ACC, but they are still an independent football program. And as we continue through this, and there's not much that excites me about this game. I think Notre Dame is going to, you know, just completely drill the Blue Devils. But when you get to the end of the season, will Notre Dame see the value of being a member of a conference? Normally, if they lose one or two, they are completely out of the conversation. If you lose one or two in a conference, there's still hope. You could get to that conference championship. You win your conference championship, you might have a seat at the table for the college football playoffs. So I think all of us believe that they'll go right back to being an independent, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays itself out.
14th ranked Texas at home against UTEP.
In any other, you know, season, Tom Herman would be a guy that we'd be talking about as on the hot seat.
Sure.
I think everybody, or I think most coaches are going to get a mulligan this year because of the circumstances, because of the unique situation that they're all in. But I want to see this Texas team, and you know, we hear about their quarterback, we hear about their, you know, their defense, and they're finally healthy, and they've made changes at the coordinator position. You know, Chris Ash, who was the former head coach at Rutgers, is on the staff there as one of the coordinators. So it'll be interesting to see if the changes that they have made this offseason will pay off into better production and better football on the field.
One of the high-rising programs this offseason, especially on the recruiting trail, 18th-ranked North Carolina, they welcome Syracuse. Mack Brown making some waves in the ACC.
And I'm really excited to see this team. First of all, I'm a big fan of Mack Brown. Yeah, I think he's a terrific football coach and a terrific human being. But when you think about this offense, it's Sam Howell, young quarterback, freshman last year, breaking records. And they have 10 of 11 starters back on offense. They've got three receivers, Daz Newsome, De'Ami Brown, and Bo Corrales, all three of their top receivers that are back from last year. They didn't have spring ball. They didn't have a full training camp, so I don't know if that general progression from year one to year two for a young quarterback will be the same, but when you have all three receivers back, you've got the same offense, you've got 10 of 11 starters back, there should be a step forward for Sam Howell, and I'm excited to see what that will bring for the Tar Heels.
And lastly, number 23, Iowa State at home against Louisiana.
This one is interesting to me simply because they're in a Big Ten state. Iowa State will be playing football in Ames, Iowa, in Iowa City, where the Hawkeyes reside. They will not be playing football. It'll be interesting to see how the fans, and I don't think there's going to be any fans in the stands. I think they've announced that for at least the first game they won't have fans. But, you know, what will it be like? What's it going to look like? And what will Matt Campbell have? You know, and a guy that I have a lot of respect for, what will this team look like under him this year?
Yeah, that Iowa-Iowa State rivalry has really turned into a good one with Iowa State's emergence under Campbell. Lastly, John, I just love that at 10 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday, there's going to be Kansas Coastal Carolina, 9 local in Lawrence. Give me some.
Yeah. Hey, less is more. And that is
late night less.
Miles, the former Michigan offensive lineman, former Michigan offensive line coach. And I'm excited to see what he can do as he continues to try and rebuild this Kansas program.
They're getting better.
They are getting better. And you know, they not hard to get better from where they were, but you know, he continues to build this program, so we'll get a chance to see him play on Saturday night.
All right, so that's a look at college football coming up this weekend. Number 5 on our 7 from 77. NFL began on Thursday night. Chiefs, the defending champs, take down the Texans 34-20. Your impressions, not just of the game, but also the experience. Kansas City probably will have some of the highest attendance figures early on. They had, I think, about 17,000 people at the game last night. definitely a different experience, but with some fans, it's still, the ambiance was still there.
Yeah, it was. You could still hear some crowd noise. And, you know, it's, I was excited for the NFL season to get kicked off, like I am every year, with a little bit more added appreciation for what I know that those players and the staffs and those franchises had to go through just to get to this point. None of, you know, a lot of us thought that it was a possibility. And now that we finally have one game in the books, now we're going to look at week one, the first Sunday. We'll have our first Monday night game, which is going to be Brian Greasy in the booth. I'm excited for the opportunity that he has to fill the shoes of one of our teammates, and that's Dan Dierdorf.
That's right.
And so a lot of great things to look forward to this weekend. But Kansas City, gosh, they just picked up right where they left off. And this is a team that they didn't need any more weapons on offense. But when Clyde Edwards-Helaire was taken at the end of the first round by the Kansas City Chiefs, it just felt like a perfect fit. And last night, it looked like a perfect fit. And so this is a team that, you know, in the second half of the season, their defense really started to play well, and we saw it, you know, continue to play well all the way through the Super Bowl. You pair that with the weapons that are around Patrick Mahomes, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It just it seems like we're looking at something that could be special, not just this year, but for a number of years to come.
Also, Andy Reid can pull off that shield better than anybody. That was great.
Get him some Rain-X or some anti-fog. I mean, I don't know. Did you think he actually saw the game?
I mean, if you have that offense, I think you can kind of, you know, you delegate well, right?
Yes.
I think you can probably get some of the wipers, right? Like, just put them on the inside. I think that's the week two adjustment. They've got a long week. Go for it. Number six, John, full slate of NFL coming up Sunday. You gave your Lions prediction of 10-6. Lions and elsewhere, what are you watching on Sunday?
Well, obviously, I'll be watching what happens at Ford Field. The Bears are coming to town, the Fighting Mitch Trubisky's. He's going to be the starting quarterback. He's played well against the Lions. And I think the Lions have a good opportunity to be a lot better this year. And I know I made my predictions earlier this week, but when you think about, you know, Matt Stafford at quarterback, I think they've got a serviceable offensive line. Taylor Decker just signed a new deal. Frank Ragnow in the middle. Those guys are going to be what they're going to continue to build this line around. How well they protect Matt Stafford is how this team is going to go. If he can stay healthy, we saw in year one of Daryl Bevel in the first half of the season, some of the best numbers Matt Stafford has had all season long. With a full season, with, you know, Kenny Golladay and that receiving core, you know, throw Adrian Peterson and his leadership into the backfield with Kerryon Johnson and DeAndre Swift. I think you've got a potent offense. Now on defense, it comes down to how much pressure and where will that pressure come on a quarterback. Excited to see Jeff Okuda in a Lions jersey. So that'll be one game I'm looking at. And the other game that I cannot wait to see is my former teammate and the greatest NFL quarterback of all time, Tom Brady, in his new digs down there in Tampa. So they get a chance to open up with the New Orleans Saints, which we're going to get a chance to see that game twice this year.
Amazing.
But it's just going to be, I think, an epic matchup, and all eyes will obviously be on him, you know, after spending so long and with so much success with the New England Patriots, starting over and the return of Gronk to the NFL.
Going to be awesome. Really, really good stuff. Just thankful to have some NFL back. Yes. Thursday night was great. It felt normal, which is bizarre.
It's great for the profession too. Yeah, makes sports talk radio that much easier.
Weird how that works, right? Yes. No 2021 mock drafts, thank God. Mm-hmm. All right. Lastly, on 7 from 77, John, Eric Anderson, our guest. Really looking forward to sharing this interview. You guys talked for about 30 minutes, and John, just what do you remember growing up watching the lone Butkus Award winner in Michigan history, Eric Anderson?
The one thing that I've learned at the University of Michigan is that the things that I heard as a player, the things that are continuing to be taught to these players and told to these players were the same things that Eric Anderson heard, the same things that Dan Dierdorf heard. And that's going back, you know, over 50 years now, is that, and the one thing that I think rings true is the expectation is for the position. When you step into that right tackle spot, you are expected to play like all of those guys that came before you. And that's a heavy expectation to hold on to. And I just say right tackle because that's the one that I played, but it's the left tackle, it's the center, it's the quarterback. And at the linebacker position, the expectation is for the position. And Eric will actually share this, and I'm just going to touch on it briefly. We'll let him tell the entire story, but he was a leading tackler for 4 years at the University of Michigan, set a record, the only guy to ever do that. And he was given that opportunity because of an injury that happened to a player ahead of him. He stepped in. He was ready to play at the moment. It sometimes, and this is a lesson for life as well, when an opportunity comes, you better make sure you're ready because that opportunity may not come around twice. If he wasn't ready at that time, and he even mentions this, I might not have had the opportunity until I was a senior, if ever. And he made the most of that opportunity. He stepped in. So I can't wait for our listeners to hear the entirety of that conversation. But before we get there, do we got a bacon fact today?
We do. Speaking of greatness, Kevin Bacon. so he has a favorite sandwich that he claims that he invented. He calls it the Blast. Bacon, lettuce, avocado, smoked salmon, and tomato. So we're adding avocado and salmon into a BLT. Scale of 1 to 10. I know you'd eat it because it has bacon on it and you eat everything with bacon on it. But scale of 1 to 10, your thoughts on the Blast?
Well, love salmon. I don't necessarily want it on my BA because I would pare that down to bacon and avocado.
A bah.
Yeah, a bah. Because tomato, I just can't do tomato.
I'm with you.
Salmon, like I said, I'll do that separately. You could put that on the side. And lettuce, quite honestly, it's just a waste of space, which could be added with more bacon. So let's get that stuff out of there, and let's just put a heavy slab of bacon. You can sprinkle it with some avocado, put it between nice two thick pieces of Texas toast, and you got yourself what I would deem as a great sandwich.
Speaking of the lettuce of this podcast, let's get you and me out of this, the wastes of space, yes. And let's get to Eric Anderson.
Yes, everybody, please enjoy the conversation with former Michigan captain, Butkus Award winner, and just a great individual, Eric Anderson. Welcome back, friends. And as I mentioned, we're going to be joined by a former Michigan captain, a Michigan man, and I can't wait for you to hear his entire story. A lot of great moments on the career of Eric Anderson. Eric, first of all, thanks for joining us. And how are things down in the state of Ohio?
Well, thanks for having me, John. And yes, it is. Things are fine. It is a different time with everything that's going on in the world, but we're doing okay down here. It's not always easy to tell people where I'm living, but that being said, we're okay in that state down south. We're doing okay.
So what are some of the challenges that you have right now as a Wolverine in enemy territory?
Well, where do you want me to start? We got to start getting back on that winning ways.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, it is tough. I mean, because it is such a storied rivalry. I do have the ultimate comeback because the years that I played were good for Michigan. And so whenever anybody wants to talk to me about current records and the state of Michigan football and where we stand in the rivalry through recent years, all I have to do is just put up 4-0. Okay. So the four years that I played on the field, we beat Ohio State each year. So that kind of quiets them down a little bit. And then, of course, they go into the rhetoric of what about now, what about currently, and all of that. But that's the hardest thing at this point in time is just trying to stay the course and just wait till things are cyclical. And we'll be back. We'll be back.
That's a question that I, when I ask somebody, I always need to know the answer before. And I'm glad that I knew that you were 4-0, because at my time at Michigan, I was 3-1. So it's nice to have somebody on here that can one-up me in that category. When you were growing up, right? And you were, I know, born out in California, but you lived and you were recruited in the state of Illinois. What went into the decision to go from just outside of Chicago to Ann Arbor?
What went into the decision? Well, again, recruiting was a lot different back then. Coaches could actually come out and watch your games. Coaches could come out and visit during your seasons. And I know that recruiting has kind of gone cyclical, but it was different. Growing up, I was not a kid that really knew a lot about Michigan football. My dad played football at Northwestern. I grew up in the northern suburbs of Chicago. So I watched the Bears and I watched Northwestern football. But mostly I was playing. I didn't do a lot of watching. I was doing the playing. So when the recruiting process came around, it was exciting because I was getting letters from all over the country. And I really took it to heart that I really wanted to make a decision that was best for me. You know, the letters, the recruiting, you know, of course, being, you know, a Big Ten guy, you know, I had Northwestern, I had Illinois put on a really hard push, stay in state. But I narrowed down my five visits to UCLA, Penn State, Notre Dame, Michigan, and Northwestern. I started out my trips. The first trip I went on was to Michigan. Was Ann Arbor, and Mark Ramirez, who was another guy from the Chicago area. He was my host, took me out, and it was a good visit. It wasn't the end all. I didn't go into Bo's office and ask him, you know, I want to sign me on that dotted line. I wanted to take my trips because when I make the decision, I wanted to make sure that it was an educated decision. So then I went out to UCLA and actually fell in love with UCLA. Who wouldn't? And, you know, in December, January, taking a recruiting trip from Chicago, going out to LA and seeing the weather and seeing this could be year round. I mean, I fell in love, and had they actually had the papers up front, I might have signed with UCLA just based on weather. Third trip I took was out to Penn State, and Penn State had just won a national championship. So they had a big parade that day that I was out there. And again, it was a lot of people out there, a lot of recruits, big recruiting weekend, as you could probably imagine, having a parade for a national champion. And then I came home. And now I still had my trips to Notre Dame and to Northwestern on tap. And don't know if it was by design, or it just fate happened it this way. But that Monday that I came home from my Penn State recruiting trip, Bo and Jerry Meter, who was the recruiting guy for Chicago, had scheduled the in-home visit for that Monday when I got back from Penn State. And so Bo came into my house, and the funny story is he was a little bit late. Okay, weather related, but as Bo always said, hey, there's the real time and there's Bo time. And Bo time, you make sure you plan for everything and you're at least 5 to 10 minutes early. That was on time for Bo. So it was a little bit surprising that, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock rolled around. I think it was supposed to be there at 6 o'clock, and it was 6:05, 6:10. And then there was a knock on the door. And my dad opened up the door and he said, Bo, you're late. And he closed it on him. He let him stew a little bit, probably for a minute or two, then opened it back up and welcomed him in. And the two things that I remember most about the Bo's in-home visit, and this is really what solidified in my mind that Michigan was the right place for me. Bo looked me in the eyes. And again, recruiting was a little bit different back in the mid to late 80s. I mean, there were promises being made by other universities that that can't be made now, probably couldn't be made back then as well, but they were being made. You know, hey, what's it going to take to get you to come to my school? Hey, if you come, you know, your brother's got a scholarship. Hey, you know, what do you want to come to our university? Well, Bo sat down, and the first thing out of his mouth was, he said, "All right, Eric," he goes, I'm going to make you a promise." And I said, "Okay, here we go. What, you know," yeah. I thought Michigan was going to be different. And he turned to me and he said, "Eric," he said, "the promise I make to you is a fair opportunity to compete to play at the University of Michigan." And that was it. A fair opportunity to compete to play. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it. Well, then he turned to my mom and he said, "Chris," he said, "the promise I'll make to you is if you send me your boy, if you trust me and you send me your boy in 4 or 5 years, I'll send you home a man." Okay. And that meeting lasted, you know, probably about a half hour, 45 minutes. He was in house. He had to go other places. As soon as we closed the door and he left, I turned to my mom and dad. I said, "That's who I want to play for." I had made the decision right then and there that I wanted to be wearing the maize and blue and play for Bo.
So I wasn't going to get into this until later, but since you brought it up, you know, he made you a promise about the ability to compete. He made your mom a promise about 4 or 5 years. In the middle of your time at Michigan, he steps down as the Michigan head football coach, Gary Moeller, takes over. What was that transition like? Did you see it coming? And was there any thought in your mind, wait a second, he made this promise to my mom, but he's not going to be here for the last couple of years of my career?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I mean, no, we did not see it coming. You know, Bo had heart issues earlier. He actually had a little bit of a scare even while I was at Michigan then, where he missed one of our bowl games due to that. And Coach Moeller took over and coached that bowl game. But I didn't see it coming. I mean, other people might have, but I did not. It wasn't easy. I mean, he called a full team meeting and he explained the situation that he was stepping down as the head coach. And I mean, personally, I was devastated. I mean, I went to Michigan to play for Bo Schembechler. Again, obviously I fell in love with Michigan. I fell in love with the football program. But the reason I went there was to play for Bo. Bo, you know, also, you know, the one thing he said in that trip that as we're talking about this, that I remember is he said, you know, after he made me that promise of that fair opportunity to compete to play, he said, "Now, don't get me wrong." He said, "If you're the type of player that I think you are," he said, "I think you have a good shot at being a captain someday, but that's on you, but that's on you. That's not a promise, but you have to be able to earn that." And so I was very lucky that I was a captain at Michigan. I mean, we had some great players, and I still look at that as probably the greatest honor was to be named captain. I know others have said the same thing. But years later, I did, you know, through some functions, you know, I had an opportunity to talk to Bo, and I told him I was still mad at him. And you know, he said, "For what?" And I said, "Well," I said, you told me that you could see me being one of your captains." "Oh, Eric, you were a captain." I said, "Yeah, but I wasn't a Bo captain." You know, I love Coach Moeller. Coach Moeller was cut out of the same cloth, but Bo's Bo. And you know, that was tough. But that being said, just like Bo always used to say, next man up, you know, you next man up, you know, you never know. You're one play away from having to perform. And that's how he made everybody prepare. And so Coach Moeller was the next man up. And so we had all the confidence in the world. I mean, that's really when our offense started to really blossom a little bit more than it was under Bo, because, you know, Coach Moeller then really opened it up, that offensive playbook. And I think that really helped us the next 2 years grow into an even better team.
And one of the games that I wanted to talk to you about, there's a number of games we'll get into, but the 91 Notre Dame game. Obviously, you very familiar with Notre Dame growing up not far from South Bend there, just outside of Chicago. But that 91 game, we all know it as the catch from Desmond Howard. It started his path to a Heisman Trophy. I know that year you were a Buckus Award winner, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what did that rivalry mean for you? Not just, we've talked about the Ohio State game and what that means to be a Wolverine, but for you, what was it like playing in that game against Notre Dame?
Well, you're right, John. I mean, I grew up in the northern suburbs of Chicago, and I went to a Catholic grade school, played football in CYO. Went to St. Catherine Laboure, little shout out. But You know, I wouldn't say that I was necessarily a Notre Dame fan, but, you know, growing up on the north side of Chicago, growing up in Chicago, you would think Chicago was a suburb of South Bend. Right. There's that much support. There really is. So I knew, I knew a lot about Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was, they were in it having, you know, at that time with Lou Holtz, they had phenomenal teams. They put some records up, and, you know, I think they won a national championship, and they, you know, they played well. And so there was a little bit extra, you know, in on my side of things growing up in Chicago. That, and also the fact that we hadn't beat Notre Dame. You know, I say that we were 4-0 against Ohio State, but going into that last game, I was 0-3. I was 0-3, 0-4 going into that game, you know, from a Michigan side of things. I mean, we hadn't beaten them. So there was a lot on that game. There was a lot of intensity, and there was a lot riding on that, because we did not want to be a team that went 0-for against any other team. And it was close. I mean, it was it came right down to the wire. I mean, it was that there was a lot on that game for us, and even more so being a guy from Chicago.
24-14. Desmond has the catch. Did you see the catch?
Not live. Not live. We were in defensive huddles. We were doing, you know, if I remember correctly, which again, you may find footage and see me watch it, but I don't have recollection of actually seeing the catch, you know, live. Obviously, what I remember is the explosion of noise afterwards when he did make the catch. But I have seen it obviously replayed time and time again, and you know, it's that was a phenomenal catch. I mean, it was a great throw, but it was an even better catch.
The aftermath of that game, what was it like on the field, in the locker room, to experience? And you mentioned that you hadn't beat Notre Dame in a while. Lou Holtz had a stellar record against Big Ten opponents. You guys come away with the win. What was it like on the field, and then what was it like in the locker room after that?
It was amazing. I mean, it really was. I mean, it was. Again, it was as exciting finish that I had ever been a part of, with all the emotion that went into it. Again, we had been close before too, and then we'd also been kind of blown out a little bit too. But to see us come, you know, have a lead, then go down, and then take over and actually get the win at the end, I think it was really more a sense of relief. Excitement, obviously we were excited, but really a sense of relief to say we finally got over that hump. I mean, they talk about the luck of the Irish. We witnessed that firsthand several times within that series, the years that we played. We saw them, you know, make Lake Dawson made a catch that he should not have made. It should have been an incomplete pass or an interception. But we'd seen that time and time again. And as that game started to wind down, those emotions of, oh no, here we go again. Can we do this? Should we do this? Are we going to have an opportunity? And then to have it finish, it really was that sense of relief. Like, all right, now we can get back to business of playing football, because we kind of got the monkey off our back. But, and then in the locker room, it was like any celebration that you've been a part of. It was euphoric, because we'd finally gotten over that hump in a big game. Against a team that we had not had success against, which was unusual for us at that time. And to get that win, I think it really set us up for the rest of that season, which really was a very good season as well.
So we mentioned the catch by Desmond. Was there a moment that you remember on the defensive side of the ball when you guys were on the field that it just sticks in your mind even to this day?
I don't think that there, for me, that it's hard, because, you know, I've talked about this before. The memories I have from playing are more like when we used to sit in the meetings and watch the film.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I remember as far as visuals for games. And I think that it was when I was in the games, I was so hyper-focused on what I had to do. It was in and it was out and it was gone. For me, I don't remember a lot of plays. What I remember most about playing really are the relationships of the players, the feelings of games, but less about the X's and O's and about certain plays of the game that really don't ring out. I mean, like you said, the emotion after the game, that I vividly remember. I mean, I get goosebumps. I can remember what it felt like walking off the field knowing we had just beaten them. But as far as specific plays, especially in that game, I mean, I know that there were series that we were playing well, we were getting them stopped, we were doing our jobs, and then it was almost like, all right, now we went into a little bit of a lull. And then be able to rally back and say, all right, we're going to finish this off. Let's do what we have to do. It was really that ebb and flow that I remember from that game because it was up and down.
So during your career, you were the leading tackler for 4 seasons. A lot of people talk about records and whether they mean something or not. One, I want to ask, does that record mean something to you? And also, is that a record that may never be broken simply because of the way college football is now?
That record absolutely means something to me. You know, I'm very proud of that. But what it means more to me is that I had 10 other guys on the field doing their job, and that I had 10 other guys on the field that I could count on to do their job. I was a part of it. Maybe not on paper, you know, the best team, best defenses in Michigan history, but I wouldn't trade, you know, those defenses for any in the history of Michigan. I am proud of the fact that we played team defense. I'm proud of the fact that, you know, that we did what we did. And I am. I mean, that record is something that I turn to. That I say, hey, you know, I have something to be able to hold on to. As far as it ever being broken, well, it can't be broken, right? I mean, it could be tied. Right. And I don't know if they're necessarily going to be fine. I mean, maybe, I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, we're in a middle of a pandemic. If somebody gets that extra year,
it could happen. It could happen. Will it happen? But no, you're right. You know, times are different. Guys are leaving early, guys are taking off, not necessarily sticking around for 4 or 5 years. And again, that's their choice. So I think it is a different time. Will it last? Probably, but you know, as they always say, records are made to be broken or at least tied. And you know, I honestly would welcome the company any day to have somebody be able to do that.
So there's been a lot of All-Americans at Michigan. There's only been one Butkus Award winner. That's you. What does that in and of itself mean to you?
Again, as when I accepted that award, I accepted it on behalf of the Michigan defense. It is an honor. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from that award. It is an honor. And in fact, when people talk about trivia, Michigan trivia, from the time after Tom Harmon won the Heisman Trophy, the next major award winner everybody assumes was Desmond.
Right.
But in fact, I won the Butkus a couple of days before Desmond. So technically I was the next major award winner since Tom Harmon. I got that ball rolling again. Now it is an honor. And I did not expect it. I really didn't, because we were Michigan was a team defense. It was a bunch of guys that just went out and played. There weren't really any stars. There were guys that just did their job. I was fortunate enough to be in the middle of all of that and be the benefactor of 10 other guys. When Dan Dierdorf actually was the MC, he was the host down there. And when I saw him before the ceremony, he told me, he said, Eric, if you win this thing, we should sing the victors up there. And I said, sure, no problem, Dan. I didn't think there was a chance. But we did. Jim Herman was there. And Dan Dierdorf and the three of us got up when they announced my name. I accepted the award on behalf of Michigan defense. And then I invited Dan back up and invited Coach Herman to come up, and the three of us did our rendition of the victors. So,
God, it's such a great memory and a great story. I appreciate you sharing that with us. But when you think about your time at Michigan, you know, we talked about, you know, the records that you have in, regards to the tackles, leading tackler for 4 years, the Butkus Award. I know there was other awards that you won, but when you think about your time in Ann Arbor, what comes to mind? Is it a game? And you kind of alluded to this earlier. For me, it's always been the time with my teammates. But what is it for you that you think about in your time in Ann Arbor?
I really go back and I think about a lot of the lessons that I learned at my time there that helped shape who I am today. That's really, I think, what has been the thing that I go back to and I think about the most. It's the times with the players. I think of, we talk about the team, we talk about selflessness. There's nobody that exemplified that for me more than John Milligan, who was another captain. But John, actually had John not gotten hurt my redshirt freshman year, sprained his ankle, I might never have played until my fifth year. But when John did get hurt, and then when he came back from his injury, there was nothing but selflessness that he exemplified. He helped me become the linebacker that I am, even to the point that it kept him off the field. To me, those are the lessons. Those are the things that I remember. I mean, I remember the summer workouts, staying up in Ann Arbor. I remember, Mike Gittleson taking us on tour, running to the Arboretum and Michigan football on tour. I remember one summer we had the summer of abs, and there's a picture that's been floating around on Facebook. Every once in a while it pops up, but his focus for us that year was who can get the best abs. And I think it was between Veda Murray and Mike Gittleson. And I think Mike Gittleson actually won the contest, our strength and conditioning coach. But it was those things. I mean, it was understanding the value of team. It was understanding the value of sacrifice. The lessons that Bo taught us, the lessons that, Coach Moeller taught us about, you either get better or you get worse. You don't stay the same. If you stay the same, then your competition is gaining on you. And again, it was the social times as well. It was being there with your teammates, both on the field and off the field. I mean, I can remember summers on Mary Court, right across, right on State Street, right down there, and really just being there with family. And those are the things that I remember more than any play, any tackle, any block, anything like that.
Tell the fans what you're doing now.
Well, there's a few things that I'm doing now. First, I'm a teacher. I went back about 15, 16 years ago, actually 17, 18 years ago, went back to school at Cleveland State to get my licensure in physical education. And for the last 16 years, I've been teaching adapted physical education for our school district here in Shaker Heights, Ohio. So I'm doing that. It's been great. It's rewarding. It's challenging. A lot of the lessons that I learned about selflessness and giving, from my time at Michigan are now being transferred to me teaching. So I've been doing that. And also been working on some things to try and help former Michigan players as well. So,
well, and I know one of those, which I've talked to you about, is for those who stayed. It's a group that, like you said, that helps former players. What is it that you are, or how do you go about helping former players? And who are some of the guys that you've been able to reach out to and help?
For years, I know that as a former player myself, I knew that there are guys that kind of at times slip through the cracks, that for whatever reason, were down on their luck. And I always said there should be something to help these players, whether it was with, CTE, health issues, jobs, anything, there should have been some sort of help out there. And for years I thought, when is somebody going to figure it out? When is somebody going to help it out? And there really hadn't been anything at any school. And then about a year and a half ago, I was approached to say, would you like to help be a founding member of this organization that we're thinking about starting? And it's called For Those Who Stayed. And I jumped at the opportunity. I said, you know what? We're going to be an organization that will be a service-based organization designed to help former players. We are going to be former players in Michigan Michigan people that are going to help former players. We have been able to, we've been very fortunate that we've been able to help some former players that have had issues with dental work. We have partnered with the dental school at the University of Michigan. Dr. Betts, we've been able to partner with people to help at no cost to some former players to get teeth work done. We've helped with funerals. We've had, you know, some of our former teammates that have died way too early, way too soon, that we've been able to help out with defraying the cost of funerals. We've also partnered with not only former players, Mel Owens, one of them who's, we're actually running a Mel Owens challenge, a 100-day challenge to start exercising. That's exciting, and it's going to be kicked off here pretty soon. But it's kind of a social thing. It's kind of, back in the day, it was always easier to get your workout done when you were on campus because you had your team with you. It's always easy to work out with somebody than to try and do that grind by yourself. So that's what we're looking at doing is there's, we've partnered with Mel Owens is doing it. And then we also have an app developer that's also going to be hooking us up with an application for your smartphone where it can be a social piece as well. We can make phone calls. We can talk to each other. We can track it, all of that. So that's exciting. We've also had the opportunity to start Heart Healthiness. We know we've had a couple of our former teammates that have passed away from heart attacks. And one of the advisors, medical advisors, our top medical advisor on our advisory board is Dr. Kim Eagle, who was actually Bo Schembechler's cardiologist. And Dr. Eagle tells a story that he got to be even closer friends with Bo than he was a patient and doctor relationship. And before Bo passed away, he had a conversation with him and he said, "Kim, you got to make me a promise." And I think they were on a boat someplace. And Dr. Kim was like, "Bo, whatever, what do you need?" He goes, "I need you to take care of my boys." And Dr. Eagle said, "Oh, Shemmy, I can take care of Shemmy, no problem. He's good guy, good friend, you know, no problem." And he goes, no, not those boys, all my boys. "Kim, you got to take care of my boys. When I'm gone, you got to take care of me. You got to make me a promise." And he said, "Bo, anything." Well, when we reached out to him to get him on our board as a medical advisor, you know, I think Dr. Eagle got a tear in his eye and he said, "You know what?" He goes, "I'm finally having an opportunity to make good on my promise to Bo all those years ago." So we've been fortunate to team up with Dr. Eagle, and he is helping us run, you know, heart programs and making sure that the education piece is out there as well.
Well, Eric, I sure appreciate your time today, and thanks for all the information and the update on what you're doing now. I always come back when I talk to former players, it's the Michigan family. You know, you mentioned singing the victors with Dan Dierdorf and how it crosses generations. John Milligan, you mentioned him. He was a GA when I was a freshman. And it just, you know, it goes on, and it's the legacy that captains and teammates leave for those that follow. But thanks for your time today, and I really appreciate it.
John, no problem. Anytime. It's always fun sitting down and talking about Michigan football and Michigan past. And you're right. I mean, it is about those relationships, and it is about the guys, and it does transcend any generation. It transcends any head coach. It really is Michigan football first and foremost.
Well, I want to make sure to thank Eric Anderson for taking time out of his day. We heard what he's doing now, obviously a teacher, but also for sharing what it means to be a Michigan football player, as a graduate, as an alumni, that you never stop being that Michigan captain, and real proud of the work that he's doing with the organization for those who stayed. Don't forget, we've got our Michigan Football Classic tomorrow. That will begin at 11:30 on 97.1 The Ticket. You can find it on TuneIn. You can find it at a number of different places where you normally hear your Michigan football broadcasts, and that will be the Fighting Irish, traveling to Ann Arbor to take on Elvis Gerbach, Eric Anderson, Chris Hutchinson, and the Heisman Trophy winner Desmond Howard with one of the epic moments in Michigan football history. Again, it starts at 11:30 a.m. Saturday morning, but if you miss any part of it, we will have it right here, not in its entirety, but in an abbreviated version on In the Trenches podcast coming on Monday. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. And we will talk to you next week on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network. MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.